You are listening to a production of the Toll Network, home of Biting Analysis. This is Laser Knees number 31, adding more flies to the soup. I'm Aleph, the thesis-seeking critic, Duat Red.
And I am Son of the Salty Critic, Duat Red.
King Heroes on trial. Critical Squadron, Duat Ranger.
Join us as, you know, we're just going to talk about Zoodra. I can't even do this little intro where I pretend we're going to be happy about this because we're not. I'm way too tired this episode.
Half of what we're talking about is nice, so I'll do it. Join us as we continue on our wild ride through Dobutsentai Zoodra. Can Yamato lead his human friends and some other guy and this human who's kind of his friend, but kind of a father figure? It's weird. It's kind of complicated. Through an adventure to save the world from the Death Galleon, who are only kind of nominally threatening it anymore at this point. Find out how we think he's doing as we share our thoughts on Dobutsentai Zoodra, episode number 38, Wings Take Flight, and number 39, which is nonsense. Just, it's bullcrap.
Our writers were for 38, Komura Junko, for 39, Tanaka Jin. Our director for 38 was Shibasaki Takayuki. For 39, it was Sugihara Teruaki. And I'm ashamed of everyone.
Yeah, that is the sort of thing that should splash back onto the director, too. I do more writing than anything else, so I mostly am just like, boo writers when they mess
up. It's definitely to some extent Sugihara's fault. It's both of their faults. There's a reason I include the directors on this.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, because we have been maybe not unfair exactly, but at least blaming things on them that were maybe not them. And that frustrating ambiguity is kind of what makes media watching, especially in this sort of long running, episodic, yet also serialized thing, kind of frustrating because you don't know who to blame. And all I want is a scapegoat. I don't even need it to be true. Just tell me there's someone I can blame. One person so that I can just cast that person out. But that's not how reality works because life is very complicated and nuanced. But since we're kind of tipping our hand already, Sona, why don't you start us off with our animal instincts and talk about what you got about from these episodes?
Okay, well, as far as 38 goes, I like this episode. Kind of a lot, but it suffers from what most of this series suffers from, in that it should have taken place 15 to 20 episodes ago. You know, maybe shortly after Misao joined the team, give him a couple episodes to get acquainted with everyone, and then do this episode. We should have revealed all of this and had the team coping with the reality of their world, you know, through getting to know Bard. Tusk even implies that his father might have known Bard, and if he was a guardian like the four of them were, he might know most of their families, which would give us more context to be exploring who they were, and thus who they are, through the way that they're adapting and interacting with him, instead of through random circumstance. I am looking at you, episode 39. And, you know, most of the show, honestly. But
oh, coincidence, the only thing that makes this show happen.
And, you know, plus, it would give us fresh angles from which to approach Yamato and Misao. We could have Yamato actually struggling with these new powers that he just suddenly is acquiring and doesn't know how to deal with, and having to train with Bard so that they could develop a relationship through that. And just think of how much nicer Misao's progression would have been if he'd had someone to talk to who knew about how awful it is to feel responsible for a death that isn't their fault, of someone from another world who shouldn't have been there.
Well, I had not thought of that, but yeah. Wow.
They could have worked through all of that together instead of just leaving Misao to be bullied by Leo.
Mm.
Like, I hope to God somewhere in these last 10 episodes we get an episode about that, because that's a real strong common point.
Yeah, it seems like it's kind of the simplest thing to do, especially since you introduce the new person and then you have to bounce them off all of the other people.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's actually going to happen, even though that's usually what does happen.
There's so much here in this episode to work with and to build off of, and while they may pull something off, I don't know if they can with how much time we have left, and I'm kind of disappointed that there could have been a lot more to explore in this show if they had front-loaded this plot instead of, you know, back-loaded it into the last 10 episodes.
You ain't kidding.
And 39 was gross, and I don't even want to talk about it here, or I'll just end up being redundant and saying everything I'm going to in the next section.
Yeah, that's legit, because, all right, well, I'm going to keep to the spirit and, like, okay, here's the message of 39. Law. Being fat is dumb, and no matter what, girls just want boys to validate their existence by their amazing manitude. There, that's 39, and we try and keep our family-friendly rating, so I can't really be honest about my thoughts about it. My euphemisms for all my swears that are kind of habitual for me have run dry. But at least by contrast, like, you know, even with the complaints that we've made about the pacing of the show just as a whole, 38 is miles better. It actually builds on a lot of the stuff that's been set up by highlighting the connection between Zhuland and Earth, as well as showing that Bard shares Yamato's skill at connecting with people who are not superficially like him, while also showing some of the forces in the world that work against connections, namely nativism, nationalistic paranoia, and or thinking of other minority groups as monoliths. I mean, I have some really vague ideas about what they might be reacting to in Japan, but I can't say for certain because my knowledge of Japanese politics is frankly very limited, and also I don't like to complain about the splinter in someone else's eye when there is, like, a tree, not even a plank, just a big old-growth tree just sticking out of mine, because as an American, there's a few messages in that idea that resonate with me pretty hard, I tell you what. But yeah, more than anything, though, 38 does the work of setting up some of these interesting thematic things that we really should have been working through, like you were saying, Zono, this entire series. But instead, we've been kind of forgetting in lieu of some of the most perfunctory and also just god-awful focus episodes I've seen in Sentai in quite some time. Now, in fairness, I'm more of a writer guy, so I've seen very sporadic chunks of Sentai. I'm not like I haven't seen every Super Sentai from, like, 2000 on, but in the ones I've seen...
I've seen everything from Abba Ranger to present, with the exception of Ninja, and I've seen handful of things before that, and you're not wrong.
Yeah, I just finished Bioman. We just sort of jump around to whatever sounds cool, and yeah, this is the first one I've seen that I'm just like, I've reacted this strongly to, which, okay, before we got talking, and we wanted to bring this in, I had commented to Sono a little that this is the Sentai series that feels like it's going to be going Gaiman Drive on us, and I did not see that coming.
The thing is, it's not even the overarching, like, plot or tone or message that's the problem the way it was in Gaiman Drive. It's just, there's so many bad individual episodes that drag the show down. Because, like, with Drive, it's, oh, there's this, yeah, this overarching tone of, like, police superiority and destroying the other, and, like, Gaim just, you know, devoured Hope and, you know, went behind a tree and let it back out, to say that in the cleanest way possible.
That's a good euphemism.
Whereas this is just, it's like, hey, this is okay, and then it's just, you present an episode, and it's like, this episode wasn't good. And you get another episode, and it's just, this episode wasn't good.
Yeah, it's, like, on the whole, like, if we just take the plot, I think, you know, it's a perfectly mediocre soup. Not good, but not bad, just, you know, fine. It's fine. It's like, if I paid a dollar for this bowl of soup, I'd be like, well, I paid a dollar. But then, like, as you're getting the soup, the waiter just comes by and just starts just unloading bucket after bucket of flies right on it.
I mean, I'd even call the soup itself pretty good. Even if in, you know, experiencing it, they forgot some key ingredients, which they then brought out 3/4 of the way through the meal and pretended that's the way you're supposed to eat it. But then they just keep adding more flies and don't learn from that. And they just keep making more and more bad episodes with bad plots, especially regarding the girls. And regarding Leo being in the same country as a woman, and just, you know, any girl in general. And it's just constantly gross regarding any episode that's about a woman at all. Like, how is this show led by a woman writer? I mean, it's not that, you know, women can't, you know, write a bad thing. Not all of them can be winners.
Oh, yeah.
That's just how it is.
Yeah. Look.
But, and, you know, 39 specifically is written by Tanaka, and, you know, a quick scan seems to put him on at least one of the worst offenders, and, but, like, usually, if it's a woman writing a show, that's not the biggest problem.
Yeah, it is kind, like, she's the head writer, and I don't know what that actually means. I don't know, like, does she get script control, does she get veto power, but, like, there's a lot of stuff where you would expect, when they gave it to a second person in the room, that person would go, no.
And, I mean, Komura did write the one with Leo and the girl on the mountain, so she's not totally blameless in this.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Tanaka wrote the Halloween episode, and at this point I can't remember the plot for most of the individual episodes because it's just too much. But Tanaka did write the cute episode where Tusk reads the storybook to the kids, and that one where Narya, like, kidnaps Mario and anyone else wearing an animal costume.
Oh, right, that happened and nothing came from it.
Yeah.
That was weird.
I mean, like, Misao came from it, but nothing with Mario.
Yeah.
In spite of how much he was in that episode. But, like, both of them have written some pretty okay episodes, but also some real bad ones.
Yeah, like, I don't remember all the ones, you know, I don't remember specifically who wrote what except for, oh, I forgot the guy who did the sumo episode. I like that sumo episode.
Oh, yeah, Shimoyama has only written two episodes, and they were, like, the best episodes of this show.
Yeah, they're the ones where I'm like, oh, hey, I don't want a bus to fall on Leo.
Like, I wish he was, like, the primary secondary writer on this show. I feel like it might be a lot better.
Yeah, like, if instead of Tanaka Jin, it was Shimoyama, it'd just be like, yes, okay, I think this would be a much more fun show. But, and again, like, I'm not going to pretend like I think that writing for a Toei weekly tokusatsu show isn't, like, a freaking marathon that only the bravest, most confident, and or the most foolish would ever dare to attempt. But, like, still, like, this stuff did happen on Kimura's watch. And, yeah, and it just makes me feel so bad, because, like, this is Laser Knees' inaugural show. This is the one we came in on. And it's got so many problems and so many things to complain about. And then, like, it's really weird and fun. Well, maybe not fun, but funny at least, because we go from having like 2 years of rough road over on the Uncommon Cast. I think that's a fair assessment. And then we come out, and then there's this Kamen Rider show, and we're all just like, yeah, all right. Problems, sure, but overall, yeah. And then we come in on this one, and like, it's bumpy, and now we're just sort of going so angry at it, which is so, I don't know if that's fun for the listeners, but it's not fun for me. I don't like being negative this much. Not in a sustained way.
I really want to like this show because there's so much in this show that I like. There's so much in Zuoja that I'm really fond of.
Yeah,
the episode plots are not one of those things.
Yes!
And it's real unfortunate because it keeps happening. And this could have been like a real B+ level show. Like, I don't think I ever felt like Zuoja was going to be one of the greats, but I thought it was going to at least be,
I could go
be
C
like,
plus B minus, but, you know.
I thought it was at least going to be one of the, like, real good ones.
Yeah, I could. Oh, you'd hope. I mean, come on, they brought back the Gokaiger.
Yeah, and look how well that turned out for us.
Yeah, that it's the same monkey's paw thing that happened when the Kamen Rider GP movie happened.
Yeah.
And you're just like, all right, look, all I really want is to see the Gokaijus again. Then I'll be happy. That's all I want. And then just the monkey's paw just curled down. It's like, here you go, buddy. Here you go.
It's like, oh, this isn't what I wanted at all.
Yeah, no.
But I mean, overall, as far as 39 specifically goes, Sela deserves better, Iwanaga deserves better, and this whole show deserves better.
Yeah, the whole genre deserves better than this. Like, look, I'm sure other Sentai shows have had worse episodes. I haven't seen them.
I mean, look, the Pink Buster episode still exists, and that is the absolute bottom for me.
Okay, so there's one worse. That's good. I haven't seen that one, though, so.
That and, you know, Mochiroid. These are two episodes in the last maybe 10 of GoBusters, and they have no business.
Oh, wait. Maybe this is their stealth tribute to the last episodes of GoBusters, then.
Maybe. You know what? I'd have to rewatch the Pink Buster episode that I don't want. Actually, no, because... It was a Hiromu episode.
Don't do that to yourself.
The thing with the Mochiroid episode is it's word for word another episode that had already been in the show.
Nice. Well, it's like that thing with comics in the 60s. Like they're just like, look, the kids read them and they age out of them in 2 years. So you can reuse the same plot every 2 years. You can reuse the same issue. It's fine. No one cares. This is the one where Jimmy Olsen marries that gorilla. Just go. Do it again. We don't
care. It's literally shot for shot the same episode.
That, you know, on a certain level, I admire the audacity.
I feel like it and Pink Buster happen, like, very close together, if not, like, adjacent.
And that was just Kobayashi just being like, I'm done. Done with all y'all.
They're real bad episodes. Pink Buster was 41. 41 and 45.
Not adjacent. Not far off. This, within a month of each other.
Yeah. Again, last two episodes within the last 10, and they're the worst episodes in Super Sentai, as far as, you know, I'm concerned. 39 might take third place, though.
That's saying something, because, like, those must be abysmal.
Mochiroid wouldn't be so bad if it wasn't literally an episode that already happened.
Yeah. But, so, again, since we've got our hackles up, why don't you talk to us a bit about your problems and nitpicks with the episodes this week, because, you know, we've got a couple for 38, but we're, I don't know if we're exactly on a schedule here, but 39 is going to take a bit.
A little bit. 38 is just a little bit of nitpicking, but with Bard being Zuo Bird, he's still fully eagle motifed. And that feels a little lazy, because there are other birds in the world.
Yeah, he's an entire, like, classification. Like, he's not Zuo Eagle, he is Zuo All the Birds.
He is an entire animal kingdom.
Yeah, which, I mean, look, that's pretty impressive.
It's like, you know...
Like, that'd be like being... The only thing I think higher would be, like, being Zuo Mammal.
I mean, it's pretty much equivalent to that.
Yeah, true, because, yeah, birds are... Yeah, good call.
So,
it'd be, like, being Zuo Mammal.
So it's like, you know, there are other birds in the world. Even if you want to stick to birds of prey, you've got, like, several dozen. Do a little something.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I guess that's all I've got, because I was pretty into this episode. All
right, well, I have some that are sort of just leftovers from the previous episode, and some nitpicks, because the monsters, still really uncomfortable for me. I don't know why, I think it's the big sideways baseball caps, just something about it, just, like, not sure what you're going for, guys, I don't think I like it. Also, the horse masks, they never stop being hilarious in a way that kind of takes me out of things. Like, could they not even try and do a nonsense thing where they put some sort of cheap animatronics in there to make the mouths move or something?
I mean, I feel like at least they stuffed some, like, tissue paper in there so they weren't completely floppy.
Yeah, which is, look, I appreciate it, but still. And okay, I was actually weirded out at the idea that Yamato just straight up got Bard's techniques on top of his powers. Like, it's a nitpick, and nitpicks are kind of all I got, because at this point in the series, they don't really have time to do a lot with any of the interesting stuff they've got bubbling away, so it was a really satisfying scene, and I still... Well, we're going to get into good stuff later, but 39. Sono, start us off.
This whole plot was bad, all of it. Everything in this episode was bad. Who wanted this? Who looked at this script and said, yeah, okay, this is a good idea? Because, like, Yanagi Miki is a good actress. She's done a lot with Sella. She's done...
Yeah, she really has.
She was soulless in this episode. Like, you could tell she really wasn't into this.
Yeah.
Also, like, this is probably the nicest bit I have, like, the nicest unpleasantness I have about this episode is the monster of the week was food themed. Why was this not an Amu episode?
Yeah. Or you could have it be Sella and just, like, have it be about the fact that sharks just, they tear through things.
But Amu's whole thing is she tastes stuff.
That's true.
And that's been horribly underutilized, is she has this weird taste power. And then you have a food-themed monster and don't do anything with that. And, like, take Amu, being aware of the fact that Rei is weird and manipulative, and manipulate him back. Like, that would have at least been easier to watch and a better use of this weird, gross habit of Amus that they seem to want to, like, force me to watch in a bunch of other episodes instead of just watching this guy manipulate Sela with zero consequences.
Yeah, I think this episode would have been a lot better if it would have been just about Amu busting on Date.
Yeah.
For just 22 minutes. For like 15 minutes and then she fights a monster. That'd be fine.
Yeah, like this guy just trying real hard and she's just like, I know what you're doing.
Yeah. Brother, I don't know what makes me sadder, that you tried this on me or that you thought it'd work. But, okay, putting that aside, though, I'm just glad that even though we do open with that food monster making everyone fat, with the implication that being fat is just disgusting or hilarious, which, as a gentleman of size, let me tell you, I really appreciate, let me tell you. But the nice thing I'm going to say is, hey, at least the horror of the episode does not end up being in any sustained way, oh noes, what if fat?
I mean, I'll give the episode
I'll give it that much.
I'll give it that. Yeah. That's probably the only thing that I'll give it, even though it does have one or two pretty unpleasant lines on the subject. You know, enemy of women everywhere. Come on, please.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. No kidding.
Don't
like,
even
look,
start.
If we're gonna say high calorie food, high fatty food is just bad for you. Look, I'm not gonna fight on y'all shouldn't eat just grease. I'm not gonna fight on that. But you don't get to say it's like it's worse for one person or the other, because like that's, she's a shark. Sharks are just like, give me those calories. You don't know what you've unleashed. Because, yeah, now she's got the calories to just, anyway. But anyway, all my anger and problems with just the monster are still the nicest thing I'm going to have to say.
Yeah.
Actually, I think I might have some like good parts, but they're still kind of, this is still like one of the nicest things I have to say.
Actually,
about the
episode. This is the nicest thing I have to say about this episode. Where did that memory construct get a car?
You know, it's probably part of the construct, but still. I think mostly it's just like, hey, we just want to look at Date Akira getting out of a really nice sports car.
And look, I am all in on that. But it's just like, we see him make this dude, and then we see that dude get out of a car. And I'm like, Kubar, you don't even know what a car is.
Yeah.
And then there's the whole scene with the milk. And why?
I thought
we were past this. Why?
Like, I think the only thing more uncomfortable is, like, the bits where Misao gets turned into a Kamen Rider. Like, that's,
like,
not cool.
I can't imagine any universe in which someone would look at that scene and be like, yeah, let's show this to kids.
Yeah, this isn't going to cause a whole bunch of phobias and or fetishes.
Why? Okay, but now I'm gonna get into, like, the nitty-gritty garbage of this episode. So what turns Sela around on Rei? Like, I don't understand. She doesn't like him. She doesn't want any- She just wants to give him back the necklace and make sure he's not dead. And then he says he's interested in her, and then automatically she's smiling and likes him and wants to go out on a date with him. And it's so painful to watch.
Because, like, if it had just been like, oh, that's nice, thank you. I'm a cold-blooded fish who is famed for murdering everything I see. You're a hairless ape. It's not gonna work, brother. Like, why has that not been a thing in all of the romance?
And then Leo has this line of, she ignores me every time I try and ask her out. And it's like, Leo, that's because you're a gross person. And, like, that's not a thing that I wanted to know was actually happening between Sela and Leo. And, you know, Lord, I hope by all that this doesn't mean that they're gonna end up together at the end.
Yeah, no, because, like, talk about your just wrong as heck relationships. Again, that dude doesn't respect her at all, or rather, he doesn't respect her enough to take her seriously when she wants to martial arts fight him. I mean, I'm never going to let this go, because that was, like, a defining thing for Sela and Leo's relationship, and I'm like, why are you trying to go out with this woman?
It was the defining
thing. Is it just
because
she's a woman? Yeah, it's the thing. And okay, over and above that, this scene weirded me out for a completely other reason, which was like, why does Misao have the no romance headband and is written as all upset that she's going out with an adult when she's at least coded as being in her 20s? Like, look, I know there's clearly some kind of age difference, but is this some sort of like boy detective thing where he wishes he was 12 or something? I'm missing some here. I'm missing some cultural thing.
I don't, like, I'm not 100% sure, but also Misao seems really uncomfortable with the concept of dating or, you know, quote-unquote adult emotions. You know, just looking at this and the Halloween episode.
Yeah, it's weird, and it really makes the crap he catches about his anxiety and, sort of traumatic reactions seem kind of crueler in that light, because they're kind of coding him as having a child's emotional intelligence. And that makes it feel kind of extra mean how kind of dismissively or cruel it treats him, because it's not just that they're mocking this guy with anxiety issues, which were compounded by a horrendously traumatic event. It's also, oh, and he's really emotionally immature for some reason that does not seem to be about, he's not emotionally immature in the same way Leo is.
No, and like he's not even emotionally immature in the same way Tusk is.
Yeah, no, he seems to have, like, a child's emotional reaction.
But only when it's supposed to be funny.
They need to stop having it be funny that this dude is messed up.
Yeah, it's...
Like, he can be funny while being messed up. Like, I'm not saying that if you've got some anxiety or trauma in your past, you have to just spend all your time just being, ooh, tragic or crying. But, like, the joke shouldn't be, ha-ha, he's horrendously traumatized by an unspeakable amount of pain and horror that he has endured. That's, you don't ha-ha that. That's not cool.
Yeah, and, you know, back on that scene, why are Sela and Ray even going on a date? Like, instead of Sela just returning the necklace like she wants to, why does she not just give it to him and leave, or be like, hey, I don't want this right now, I would like to at least know anything about you first, maybe we can, you know, get some coffee and talk and be friends, and maybe, yeah, maybe date one day that isn't, you know, 20 minutes after I met you.
Yeah, do you want to just chill first? I mean, I understand, you know, there's different dating cultures and everything, but for me, I'm just like, look, before you go on a date with someone, you should probably just, like, hang out, exchange, like, so hey, what do you like to do on the weekends? I like to sit in and play video games and watch TV. Oh, cool. I like to go out and party. We shouldn't date.
Yeah. And then she, like, lashes out at her friends who are concerned about this. Like, look, I can understand her lashing out at Leo, especially if, you know, like he says, he's asked her out multiple times and she's rejected him. Because, like, look, I wouldn't want to hear, oh, you shouldn't date him from anyone that's done that to me.
Yeah, from a dude who's clearly trying to just nice guy.
Yeah, and, you know, maybe even from Tusk, just, you know, because it's another dude. But Amu was there when this started. Amu was there when she met Ray. She knows the situation and was like, hey, this is just a creepy dude trying to pick us up, let's just leave. And is way more in tune with social behaviors than Sela. So if she, and, you know, Sela and Amu have shown that they kind of respect each other in that way. Even, you know, putting all of my ship feelings aside on that. They respect each other in that way. So if Amu says, hey, I think this dude isn't legit, I feel like Sela should stop for a second and be like, maybe I should consider this, given the fact that I don't know this dude, and I've been working with this girl for a while, and I know that she knows about this stuff.
Yeah. And maybe, like, ladies listening to each other, especially in matters of, hey, that dude is creepy, that's a thing you should really be like, hey girls, when your girlfriend says, that dude is hella creepy, maybe you shouldn't do that. That's a thing you should be listening to your girlfriends about, because, you know, us dudes, we're kind of awful. And from all of the anecdotal experience, anecdotes I've heard, like, a lot of ladies have each other's backs on that, and I think encouraging women to have each other's backs against what are statistically the things most likely to kill you. I'm just saying.
Yeah. So I'm like, it sat real bad with me. And even after Sela finds out the truth, she's just sad. Like, she cries a lot and runs away, and aw, sad girl isn't loved like she thought she was, and she's weak about it. This woman is a shark. She is the strongest, or at least the second strongest, person in her country. She could snap this man in half. Like, she was not into him. Why doesn't she slap him or punch him? Why does she not get angry the way Sela gets angry at things? Like, this dude has been
using her. Just get up in his face. Yeah, get up in his face, take off the human face, and just be like, you are so lucky you're beneath my notice, dude.
Like, he's straight up been using her. She should be furious. Sela, of all people, would not be the type to just run away and cry.
Yeah, and even if she is gonna, like, be messed up about it, there are better ways to show it, y'all. Like, it reads really hard, like they're trying to do that thing where they want to make sure that all the boys in the audience know that, sure, that lady may be strong and incredibly physically capable and has no qualms about committing acts of horrendous violence, but don't worry, dudes. She is nothing without your adoration. If you do not approve of her, she will just crumble. See also Gamora in Guardians of the Galaxy, a movie I liked quite a bit, but that really just jumped out at me a whole bunch. Seriously though, like, Date has got to be really hard up for work to show up and do this. Like, because that dude was phoning it in.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And, like, he comes back in the middle of fight like, oh, I'm sorry, I actually really do like you. And then everything is okay. And, like, she laughs and takes the necklace and, like, kind of sort of flirts with him. And then at the end...
Kind of, sort of.
At the end, she's wearing the necklace and is like, oh, he's probably off conning some other girl, and laughs about it. And instead gets the bloodlust towards her friends who want to know, like, what happened and if she's okay. Like, that's not the Sela we know, and it's sending some real disgusting things out into the airwaves that I don't appreciate.
No, I don't either, because... And then you add into that the constant reputation of, oh, how pure she is, and I'm just... It reads real friggin' gross. A whole load of just... Bleh. Though it does almost make me want to see a Sentai that actually has some sort of romance going on so that we could see some good relationships in these things that don't make me want to just tear off all my skin to keep it from crawling.
I'm gonna not be mean. I'm not gonna point out Bokenger, even though it's there. I'm gonna instead...
Unless you're talking about AG and the Chief, because we have words on that. We can have fights on that.
Look, I'm not saying AG's not into him. Look, I OT6 the entire team.
Okay, see, I can get with that, but I'm just like, that dude has a type, and that type is Monster Boys.
Oh, absolutely, but I mean, like, there's canon established stuff of Sakura interested in Akashi. That's...
Oh yeah, she's interested in him. No qualms.
He doesn't notice because he's brick.
Yeah, he's dumb. Also, he just is like, Monster Boys.
But, like, that's handled real well.
I have to say.
But I'm gonna not be me on that, and I'm gonna instead point towards that episode of Decaranger where Umeko dates Gamel that had a very similar plot to this episode, but was also not disgusting.
I will agree that it is not disgusting. However, I refuse to believe that Umeko rolls with anyone but Jasmine. That's my OTP 4E.
I feel you there. I've pretty comfortably settled into this pan-poly Umeko. Because given what we see of Sen, he'd be 800% fine with it. His hobby is watching Bon and Hoji make out.
Yeah, look, you ain't wrong.
So I could see him just being like, hey, you're also into Jasmine? That's fine. You, like, I get that going into this relationship that you two have got a thing. That's fine.
And we're going to be upfront honest about it with none of these stupid nonsense games. Because, yeah, like, you are correct. Because Decaranger, like, there's no, like, everything, all the relationships feel really easy and fun, and you can disagree about, you know, about shipping or whatever, that's fine. I don't make a habit of, well, I do kind of make a habit of it more and more, but not as a general, but if you do look at it, it's just like, oh yeah, there it is, I can see it, and it doesn't look gross and manipulative, and like, hey girls, you should absolutely go out with dudes who, from the off, start out manipulating you, and are... I'm going to say 10 to 15 years older than you, because I'm just like, maybe if a dude is, general rule, 20-something ladies, if a dude just comes up to you out of nowhere and is just like, hey, I would like to date you, and he's like 10 to 15 years older than you, that basically says he's, yeah, creepy as hell. He's, at the very least, he lacks the emotional maturity, rather, he does not want a woman with the emotional maturity of someone his own age, because women his own age probably have nonsense detectors that would just... They look at him and he just lights up. He's like, 4th of July. You are full of crap, dude. Boy, this episode is really just getting all of the like, wow, heteronormativity is gross stuff is going in that.
It sure is. You know, heteronormativity, monogamy culture. Monogamy itself, yeah. Not gross. The culture surrounding monogamy is very
the thing where it's
bad.
Like monogamy is like the only thing, and if anyone does anything else, they are disgusting. It's like, well, people got different needs, yo.
Yeah, like I'm way down with poly stuff, as long as, you know, everyone is open and knows the situation. Not everyone, yeah. You know, has to be into each other. Again, you know, using Decker Ranger as an example, like, Jasmine's only into ladies.
Yeah, she, yeah.
I still have a hard time with
I don't care about the canon
10.
Stuff.
I can,
yeah.
You know,
yeah, I was just about to say, like,
over time,
there's stuff in that
you know,
movie I absolutely go with.
You know, people change, this, that, and I can live with it, even if I don't think so, but, like, she's not into Sen. She would never. There's nothing even in Decker Ranger that would, like, imply that. But
no.
Both of them,
no.
Into Umeko, Umeko into both of them, and they're okay with it. That's fine. It's like, you can, whatever you need at the moment. It's all fine. We all know what's going on. It's okay. And, like, that's.
Exactly. Like,
that's fine.
That's healthy.
That's all good.
But, yeah, but to get back to this episode, lest we just continue talking about shows that we enjoyed far much more than this episode.
We should do a Deck of Ten episode one day.
I'm down with that. I could be happy for that, yeah.
So, especially with the new movies coming out.
Yeah, we could have, like, a Deck of Double feature.
Yeah, we'll keep that in the back pocket.
Yeah, yeah. Now, again, we got that's the upside of doing only one podcast a week.
Yep, and look, maybe, just maybe, this Deck of Ranger movie will grant Anata's wish, and also my wish, of a swan-centric movie.
I wouldn't hold my breath.
No, but I can dream.
Yes. But anyway, getting back to this episode, because I'm not done hitting it, I'm mad the show has stopped giving us Misao having fights and or discussions with his Herman head animals.
Seconded.
I really liked them.
I miss his dads.
Yeah. Like, look, sometimes they were gross, sometimes they were stupid, sometimes they were not written well. I liked having them there.
Look, as long as
if
don't talk about Sela and Amu, I'm fine with them. I don't care. I don't care if they're dumb. I'm good. I'm down with some dumb humor.
Like, hey, they can just, I like when they just, like, wrap an arm around his shoulders and just be like, dude, we're just products of your deluded imagination. We aren't really here. You're just kind of, this is how you're processing your trauma, so you're just gonna have to live with that. Like, I thought those were charming bits. One more thing, giving the character development and the kind of way to go moment to Memo Ray. You see what I did there? Just felt like a weird way to try and refocus everything in this episode on a dude instead of talking more and more and more about Sela's feelings in any way that felt like it progressed the narrative.
Well, I mean, clearly we have to redeem this trash bag and make Sela like him again because, you know, God forbid she should come out of this episode being more aware of being emotionally, of what being emotionally manipulated looks and feels like, and wanting to defend herself against that.
Yeah, because remember, girls, you have to give every man a second chance, especially after he manipulates you and insults you straight to your face, because that's something you should definitely develop patience for, right? Ugh.
Yeah, I'm not here for this episode. It was awful, and I'm angry that I had to watch it a second time to make notes on it.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I accidentally just skipped over this episode, I didn't even mean to, I just did. And I was about to discuss episode 40, and then then you just said, Aleph, what the crap are you talking about? This wasn't a Leo episode. And that was fun.
The fate
okay.
tried to save you. It tried to spare you.
Tried,
but if
but
I have to
I
go down,
to,
I'm
just,
taking you down with me.
No, look, that's legit. You know, I had to put my foot down in that bear trap. It had to happen. But, final point, where the crap is Bard? Like, y'all just got this seventh hero. He was there last episode. Did they forget? Like, did they write just too many of these awful focus episodes for not Bard characters and just couldn't let them go on the cutting room floor where they clearly belong? Like, they've got so many episodes left in the show they can just afford to mess around. Okay, that was us being negative. That was fun. That was kind of cathartic. I hope we don't have to do it anymore.
Oh, we will.
But let's talk about the tide turners. Let's get to the things we enjoyed in 38 and 39.
Okay, they have square bread in Zooland, and that makes this entire train wreck worth it.
Yeah, I miss all the stuff about how just weirdly cube-obsessed Zooland is. It is charming.
And, like, it's not even that square bread would be hard to make. I want to do it now.
No.
I want to make some square breads. I just don't have a square pan. I don't have a tiny, like, 3x3 square pan in which to make square breads, but I want them.
Yeah, I do not blame you. That sounds really fun.
And I really like Bard. Like, his whole story is really interesting and compelling, and he's caught in this, like, weird moral place. And I wish this rift between Zooland and the human world was a bigger part of this plot, because there's so much ground to tread here, and I know that I said that already, but I don't think we can do it.
It doesn't stop being true.
Like, I don't think we can tread all that ground, or any, like any reasonable amount of that ground, in 10 more episodes. Especially when we've got this Death Galleon plot to wrap up.
Yeah, like, it's fun in the main plot, and there's a lot of really intense stuff happening with it, and I just keep wondering if Kusaka, I know he has a real name, but I don't care, because Kusaka is actually really fun to say. Is he just really busy? Or something, because it feels really weird to just drop this giant bomb of plot just at the end.
Yeah, I tried to look this up, because I know that, you know, I thought he'd been in a drama during the course of this, but it was a one-episode thing. But I also found out, this is completely unrelated other than the fact that this was a role that he had, in 2006 he apparently played Hanataro in the third Bleach rock musical, and my brain can't draw a connection between Kusaka and, like, tiny meek Hanataro.
I don't have context, but it does sound strange.
Like, he's just a tiny, tiny little medical boy, like, not the least threatening thing on the face of the earth. Doesn't want to be threatening, doesn't try to be threatening, just, you know, little medical boy.
I guess it's like whenever I see Masahiro Inoue.
Imagine Kusaka playing Angus with a first aid kit.
That sounds actually really adorable. By the way, Angus refers to the greatest detective in the world from The Adventure Zone, a D&D podcast that we're both quite fond of.
Yes.
As both of us have been getting back into D&D.
Angus is the closest thing I could think of offhand that would
it
be equivalent.
Instantly just gives me everything I need to know. Okay.
But, you know,
I'm just going to skip ahead since... Yeah, back to Zooger. I'm going to skip ahead because I mentioned D&D, and I just want to say that while I love that Bard is, you know, he's bad at using his inspiration feature mid-battle, but is actually doing it in 38, and on top of that, we can see that his alignment is clearly chaotic good, given his willingness to kick up a fuss when the state wants to be hella evil and suppress the truth of history, and he's happy to rebel against it. So he's not just neutral good, he's chaotic good, because he's willing to disrupt the established lawful order in order to do what's good. I totally stepped on your thing there, but
that's fine.
You mentioned the Adventure Zone, it fit.
That's fine. Bard, speaking of Bard, getting back to this, he reacts when Yamato says that getting the cube helped him believe that everyone is connected. He kind of looks a little surprised, lifts his head up a little bit, because he's not facing Yamato, and we're looking at him over his shoulder, but we see this very clear reaction. And I'm wondering if maybe he's seeing a little of himself in Yamato, especially with the way he seems kind of reaffirmed of the connections between people, and that, you know, there can be connections between humans and Zoomans after seeing Yamato fight with the others and, you know, wanting to be part of that.
Yeah, I think that's really love that bit. That dude is a really good actor, and I wish I could care about anything going on in Fize, because I want to get to the bit where he's in there, and it's just awful for apparently like 20 episodes, 20, 30.
See, the thing is, I like Fize. I can't for the life of me pin down like a specific thing I like about Fize, but I really enjoyed watching it.
Well, that's good. I would want you to. I mean, if you're gonna. But, okay. Quick aside, if I may, evil old Big Brother Turtle, a better paced show would have had this episode be the bit where we confront evil Big Brother Turtle, and he gives his "for the good of the foolish masses" or "the humans are evil" speech about how he was only doing what's best for Zooland, and like this is his heroic sacrifice of other people's lives. Like, I have sacrificed my soul for the good of the nation. I am a hero. It's like, and then we could talk about that line of evil nonsense.
Yeah, and like, I want to know who this turtle is, because I don't think he's their overall ruler, given the fact that he was confronted in a random palace hallway instead of like a throne room. And he reads more as some kind of sage or spiritual advisor, or just in general the dude in charge of everyone guarding the big warp god cube, rather than, you know, the king.
I could be had for this, because he does kind of give off that advisor feel, what with the beard and hair somehow. Like, I'd love to know what his deal is.
I'm just going to start referring to him as Turtle Jafar.
Here for it. It is law.
And, you know, I'm not going to go too into it, but I'm still kind of really leaning into Amu's dad as King of Zooland.
I could see. I'm here for that. All right.
Because, again, you know, she doesn't get to spend a whole lot of time with her dad. We didn't really know why. It was just, it's her and her mom. And
yeah.
It would explain why that random girl would look at her just doing her normal business, hanging out, reading a magazine, and be like, you're acting like a princess.
That would actually be a really nice little deep cut thing that would actually explain everything.
Yeah.
Whereas on the other hand, I'm like, yeah, she's still a cat, though. That's just kind of how cats are.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, if she's not, I'm just like, okay, well, that's just Amu. But, you know, it would make stuff make sense. But since the show doesn't want to tell me literally anything about Amu, I'm just going to make it up as I go. But, you know.
I think that's fair.
God, I really like Bard.
Yeah, it's a shame he's not in the show ever.
Yeah, I really like him.
Him and his the Juo bird suit. I really like that. That's my second favorite suit in the show.
Yeah, I'm still not quite sold on that shade of orange.
It's great for me, but I got bad eyes, and you actually have good color sense.
Like the nuance of the suit, like with the eagle thing being in color and like the visor color, like I'm down for that. It's just that shade of orange doesn't quite work for me, but I'm, like, way too nuanced with colors.
Mm.
But Yamato's combo with Amu and Leo, where they do that, like, one slash is one way and one slash is the other into an X, and then he jumps in and punches it forward, that was pretty sick.
Yeah, I do love me some energy punching. I mean, that's right up there with, like, when in Gokaiger, they'd all do their sword slash, and then Captain Marvelous would just do his, and that one would, like, slam into the back of them and just propel it forward. It doesn't make any logical sense, but it makes perfect poetry sense. Exactly. It's Super Sentai. The point is they beat the bad guy. They beat the bad guy in a flashy way.
That whole flying sky fight was also pretty great, and I guess that's what they've been saving budget for.
Yeah, it's nice to see where it all went.
Yeah, I mean, it was real cool to watch.
Yeah, I wish I didn't feel like they were basically just going to forget about it.
Oh, yeah,
absolutely.
Or not
have it pay off any further, which is, like, I don't like having that feeling. Also, speaking of things that keep getting forgotten, like, it was nice that we actually touched on the horror that is Misao's origin. Maybe we can stop treating him so bad, like his trauma and anxiety are just so hilarious, and at least pretend to understand that for all it's difficult to deal with someone with those kinds of anxiety issues, a little more understanding might be a bit more helpful. Spoiler alert, I don't think that's going to happen very much. Right, yeah, but we're still trying to be positive. Oh god. And now we're going on to episode 39.
And this is going to take some effort.
This is
going to
be a positivity workout. Yep.
You know, watching Kubar figure out the mechanics of that hand that he stole. That was kind of neat.
That was pretty cool. Like, I have to give that. Like, okay, so I can't do it out of my head. And all right, okay, that was fun.
Like that was pretty neat. I definitely want to like just watch a drama about that girl and her boyfriend. If this like evil version of Iwanaga is somewhere in her memories, like I want to know what's up with her.
Yeah.
Because I mean, he wasn't her boyfriend there, so he wasn't just a dude that was messing with her.
Yeah, she has seen some stuff.
So like, I want to know what's up in her life.
Absolutely.
Amu just taking the necklace and bailing was pretty good. Her just being
that was
like,
pretty good.
She's like, oh yeah, I'll take that. It's like, oh yeah, can I get? No, you can't get our numbers. We're leaving. See ya.
Thanks for the thing. Bye.
Like again, I wish this episode had been about her and Rei like continually trying to pursue her in like trying to fulfill Kubar's orders of keeping her away from her friends, and Amu just being like, okay, take me out for food. Okay, buy me this thing. And then just bailing before he can actually accomplish anything because she knows better, because she deals with this all the time and is just like, yeah, okay, if you want to play that game, I'll play that game, but you're not getting
spoiler
anything
alert,
out of this.
I'm going to win.
Like, spoiler alert, I've played this game my whole life.
Yeah, I'm better at it than you. I'm better at everything than you. Sorry.
I like the little remix of the ending theme that they use during the date. Like, even if I hate the date itself, that was like a real cute just mix of that song.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
And I still think it's kind of interesting that memory constructs have their own emotional depth and can kind of evolve and have real emotions, even if this
I
one
guess
was garbage.
This must be, yeah, like, there's some really intense memories. Also, I think that's one of the reasons that Bungle just always picked monsters that don't talk.
Yeah.
Because then and he was always, I always kind of got the impression he was directly controlling them, and maybe that's kind of where Oswald, rather Kubar, got off the rails here.
Well, I mean, he did the faux Leo and faux Sella, who kind of developed their own emotions.
Oh, that's true, yeah. Yeah, that's why you don't have the ones that talk.
Yeah.
Or you just don't keep them around very long. Oh, right, and then there was Yamato's mom.
Yeah, like,
man,
he was
a great bad
guy. He would just pretty much let them do that if it benefited him.
Yeah.
And, like,
but,
that was cool.
Yeah, that was cool.
Like, this is a super interesting, like, way of doing this. That unfortunately just, you know, nothing is happening with it because this show doesn't know how to write things.
Yeah, it's kind of a garbage episode. But hey, okay, one more upside. The guy playing Rei, Iwanaga, he's really attractive. I mean, like, I try not to be in the habit of let's ogle the pretty people, but I feel like that has to count something in the episode's favor. Like, if nothing else, Iwanaga got a paycheck, and that's nice.
I mean, and, like, it is Iwanaga. It was a little weird to see him without facial hair, but still, you know, Date Akira.
I admit, without the scruff, I was not 100% sure it was him, but it's like, yeah, it is him, and that's
like, I got spoiled on it. I got spoiled on the fact that he was in this episode, so I didn't get a chance to not know, because I've gotten spoiled on everyone that cameos in the show. But I'm sure that if they'd had him with his shirt off ever, anyone would recognize him immediately.
Yeah, because that dude is, like, carved out of marble. Like,
absolutely.
I don't. Yeah, who is that person who does? It goes around on the Tumblr. They sculpt all these marble figures that look like they're just these moments of time pulled out, and it just the flesh looks really soft and yielding, even though it's, you know, frickin' marble. And, like, that's what he is. He is like some sort of I don't know what the masculine form of Galatea would be, like Galateus, like someone just like, I'm going to make the most attractive man I can. And they did. I'm going a little much on.
Look, what we're saying is what we're saying is Iwanaga's a good looking dude.
Yeah, who was, again, phoning it in so hard, because I don't think he could believe the stuff he was being asked to do.
Yeah, no, like, you could tell him, Iwanaga and Yanagi didn't want to do this episode.
Yeah, it's like, well, it's in the contract. Here we go.
Neither of them enjoyed this.
No, which, you know, makes four of us. Now, that shot where Sella turns around, and look, I know the context for it is awful, but where she turns around and she's all made of shadows and her eyes are glowing red, that was cool. I wish we could see her do that on the bad guys instead of her friends, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, like, I'm all for her doing that, but that should have been her reaction to, yeah, you know what, I've been manipulating you for the past, like, 3 hours.
Yeah, that would have been great, and then he could just run.
Yeah.
Because that's what a smart person would do.
Absolutely.
Like, it, you know, especially if they'd give her the little cello burst from Jaws. Boom. Just, because if you just do the one, it's an homage, but I don't think you'd have to pay for it. Anyway, finally, to find one more good thing to say about episode 39, that shot where Cube Whale can't quite fit through the square hoop, I always love it. Even if it felt a little weird in an episode where we open with, hey, fat people, it sure would be disgusting to be fat. You know, it's a weird fit for that episode, but that is the one nice thing about the giant robot fight, because, boy, that robot is still just
not
rough.
Fun to look at.
No. Now, for our evolution segment, do you have any thoughts about what this show has in store for us in the future?
No, because I have no idea how we're going to wrap up two huge plots that we've done nothing with in 10 episodes to any kind of satisfying conclusion.
Yeah, I mean, like, they could pull out all the stops, but it is not looking good for them even trying to pull out stops. Like, 40 is a Leo focus episode, and, like, do they think they're getting an extra 10 episodes on top of the usual maximum of, like, 50? Like, maybe they could get to 52, but I think the only thing that did that was Wizard, and I don't know why Wizard got to. I'm glad it did, but
Wizard let Shoaikawa write two episodes of fanfiction just for fun.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, it's just, I don't know how they can do it without it feeling really thin and unsatisfying, and I don't want that to happen. However, before we close out tonight, we actually got some listener submissions, which is always a thing we like to do. You can email us at uncommoncastrx@gmail.com, drop us something in our DMs on @needsmoreailiff on Twitter, or what's yours again? Because I only I always just see you pop up.
I'm at Mama Fry's Meal. I'm also, yeah. My thing on Tumblr is the same. If you want to drop something in my ask box there, even if you want to drop it on Anon, if you don't have a Tumblr, I have that enabled. So, you know, feel free to come say whatever.
Yeah, just anyway. Anyway, this one's from listener Engelmeister. Or is it Engelmeister?
It might be Engelmeister. I may have typed that wrong. That might be. That might be on me. I think it's Engelmeister.
I wasn't sure. Okay, that makes a bit more sense, but, you know, I have a funny name myself, so I don't judge people's usernames.
I'm going to check that quick. I'm just going to pull up the email. Yeah, there's a T in there that I just didn't type.
Well, you know, it's easy to do. Anyway, Engelmeister writes, I've been catching up on Juoju recently, and in episode 38, something Bard said caught my eye. Near the end of the episode, Bard says the Yamato, quote, sounds more and more like him, end quote, in regards to his belief that all living things are connected. I assumed the him Bard is referring to was the human who wandered into Zhuland and fell off the cliff. But what if that dude is Yamato's dad? I mean, we know what happened to Yamato's mom, but we still don't know much, if anything, about where his dad is. I ended up going back to episode 24 to rewatch the scene at the family grave, and there's no indication anywhere about whether Yamato's dad is alive or not. But we know that someone left flowers while Mario and Yamato were away. If Yamato's dad is dead, I figure Bard could have left them because maybe Yamato's dad wandered into Zhuland, and that's why he's protective of Yamato. He could feel it's his duty to look after him since he couldn't save his dad. Alternatively, Yamato's dad could be the one who left the flowers. This seems less likely to me since we don't have time to explore the reasons why Yamato's dad could be alive but not around, but I still wanted to mention it in case there's something we know about Yamato's dad I missed. I wanted to know if this is something that had crossed your minds as well, and what you think of this idea. And Sona, you start us off, because I just read the thing.
The human being Yamato's dad was my gut instinct when we first saw him and were kind of going into Bard's story, up until he fell off that cliff. Right now, I can go either way on whether he is or not, even though I feel like it's the most likely outcome. The Zyoger's narrative has never given us specifically if Yamato's dad is alive or dead, as far as my memory goes, but what we do know about him concretely is that he and Yamato are at least somewhat, if not completely, estranged, and that his father had, from the time Yamato was a child, a problem with his interest in zoology, which is what led Yamato to, you know, run away and hang out at Mario's sometimes, and start spending more and more time there, and getting close to his uncle. I can't remember if it's specified whether that was before or after the death of Yamato's mother, though. Not that makes too much of a difference either way. But up until that guy fell off the cliff, my brain was latching on to, this dude got home and didn't want his kid near animals because a bunch of horse people beat him up and threw him in a cage. And that made perfect sense based on what little we know about Yamato's dad. So, you know, maybe this guy somehow did survive the fall off the cliff and made it home somehow, and that was still his reaction, because honestly, that's fair.
Yeah, I was just about to say, because, like, look, if a bunch of weird horse people just kidnapped you after an eagle man was, like, helped you out, then the horses and a turtle threw you in a cage, like, I would just be like, you know what? I'm not even an omnivore anymore. I'm a carnivore.
Yeah.
I'm eat horse meat. I'm eat turtle meat. I might give poultry a break, but anything that swims or is on the land.
Like, look, if
Sorry,
I...
Sorry, went a little dark there.
If that happened to me, and I got home, and my kid's like, I want to learn about animals, and I want to be around animals, I'd be like, listen, no.
Look, it's nice to want things, kid. It's not happening. Not under my roof.
But...
You don't know what they'll do to you.
But, you know, like, I'm...
But, Dad, I don't want to kill and eat all living things. They'd kill and eat you first, kid. And worse. But it's a deer. They don't kill and eat anything. Yeah, they do. And if they had hands, they'd build a cage, and they'd put you in it. So let me tell you something, kid.
But, like, I'm kind of into the idea of it not being Yamato's dad. And just, you know, some human that Bard found and took care of, and when he took off after that guy was killed because it was some BS, he eventually, you know, runs into this kid in the woods, and it reminds him of that human he tried and failed to save one time. So he's gonna do his best to save this one too, and I'm kind of really hooked on and interested in the idea of Bard just being a really good dude who loves humans and wants to help anyone he can, which kind of nicely parallels to Yamato being just a really good dude who loves animals and wants to help anyone that he can. But he just got so messed up from having his worldview shaken so drastically that he tries to be this, like, hard, jaded, tough guy, but he can't shake his true nature of being adorable and loving everything. Still, though, that guy is probably Yamato's dad one way or another, because this is Sentai, and let's not kid ourselves. We know how this goes.
Okay, so, little thing about me. When I was rather young, my parents got divorced, my dad got primary custody. So I'm actually really pro-dads on things, just because in the States, a lot of people want to talk a lot of crap about divorced parents, and it's amazing how fast they shut the hell up if you say, yeah, no, I... Single parent family. It was my dad, so yeah, maybe that's why you turned out so good. No, maybe you're just full of crap if you got a thing against single mothers, because single parenting is no freaking joke, y'all. Anyway, that's a rant for another day. But I'm really pro dad about things, especially given how often fathers are shown to be evil and or just completely useless parents. Which is one of the many reasons that I really love Steven Universe. Because, hey, like, a father who is nurturing. Yeah, a friend of mine pointed it out to me, like, stop and think. How many, like, nurturing dads are there in popular culture? And, like, I'm just looking at like, my, the anime that I have, and I'm like, no dad, no dad, no dad, evil dad, evil dad, Evangelion. You know what? I see your point. But all of this is to say, like, I am amazed at how bored I am of tokusatsu dads, and especially at least in the Toei ones. Like, I'm not even angry, I'm just bored, because it's the only story they tell. And look, okay, fine. It's not actually the only story they tell, and I'm just being hyperbolic. Thank you for backing me up there, because, yeah, no, they're... freaking isn't. But, like, even if there are a couple that I'm sure the more pedantic people could point out, gonna have to forgive my hyperbole here.
I would also be that pedantic person because I love all of the moms. I love them.
Exactly.
All. But I also love all of the dads.
Yeah.
But also,
and here's the thing.
Like, I'm with
all
you
of the moms
this.
You love, you could probably count on one hand. At least the ones who have more than three, who appear in a total of three episodes or more. Okay,
if we're counting Swan, I can think of three offhand.
Yeah, that's still less than the fingers on one hand.
Yeah, I mean, I could take a little time and I could get there.
It shouldn't take you time, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's sort of my way of framing being kind of, like, and I'm sorry, Anglemeister, I really hope this doesn't sound like too dismissive a comment, because I'm not trying to be a jerk here, but I really am kind of whatever about this dead human being Yamato's dad, mostly because it feels so absurdly safe in the first place. Because, oh yeah, now he's, he passed ownership of you onto this bird, because that's, anyway. But in the second place, like, they haven't earned it. Flat out, they have not earned it. We can call this a thing about when Bart actually shows up in the show, and or how limited that hiker's presence in the show was, and, why it is that would happen. But if that relatively throwaway guy is Yamato's dad, that's just awful storytelling. And look, I know we've ragged on it this episode, but as much as I've ragged on 39, and as much as I've ragged on a lot of episodes throughout, and just the pile of flies in my soup, Kimura Junko is at least a competent writer, and that would just, to me, read as incompetent. Like, on the other hand, like, if Yamato's dad is still alive and Bart knows that reclusive jerk through some other means, like, I'd be okay with that. Or if he just like you were saying, so, like, he just liked this weird human who crashed into Zhuland and thought Yamato was a lot like him. I'd be happy with that, too. It's one of those things where my habitual shrug about a lot of speculation and theorizing comes out, because there's a lot of really nice bits of poetry on a meta level there, if that's what's happening. What with giving Yamato just these two estranged dads, and having one of them be really chill and actually kind of a nurturing presence who allows Yamato to have a Zhuo dad, making him a better emissary between Zhuland and the human world, driving home this thing about how everyone's connected. But you put that in 38, and then you assiduously do not follow up on it in 39, and no matter the poetry inherent in the framework, like, it's not gonna work. It's too little too late.
And
then there was...
That's really where it is, though, because it's like,
yeah,
we've discussed Yamato's dad one time. In one episode, a million years ago, as far as, you know, a one-year show is concerned. It was months ago. So, if that guy's his dad, like, again, this is an episode that should have happened 15 to 20 episodes ago to make anything mean anything.
Yeah, this should be, like, the one that happens around the time where Yamato's mom, you know, where Bungle does the thing where he pulls out the memory of Yamato's mom and uses that to torment him. And again, one of the great supervillain dick moves, because that is the supervillainous kind of pettiness, where you're just like, I'm just going to wreck you. Why? You weren't sufficiently wrecked when I went to wreck you the first time. But if before or after or somewhere around that, you actually talked about this hiker or Yamato's dad, that would have resonated so much harder, and both of those reveals would have been that much more powerful. But yeah, it also, there was a PS to Engelmeister's letter. What do you think about the info that was dropped that Tusk has been a Cube Guardian longer than the rest of the Zhuojers, and so was his dad? I like getting this extra bit of info about their lives pre-series, but I wish we'd got something with that info earlier on. Or rather, but I wish we'd gotten to do something with that info earlier on.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's what I keep saying, because I latched onto that, too. Like, I grabbed onto that like a hungry dog, because it also puts Tusk at about 19, because, you know, they're saying Bard's incident happened about 20 years ago, give or take, and Tusk says it was probably before he was born, you know, which puts into context why Tusk seems to take the job a lot more seriously in that one flashback we saw, because he's been at it the longest, and he's following in the footsteps of his father, who he seems to have a lot of respect and love for, from what we've seen. And it also may make him younger than the others. It's the closest to a concrete age we have for any of the Zumans, who I'd pegged in their mid-20s like Yamato. And I mean, Yamato has to be in his mid-20s because he's graduated college.
Yeah.
But it makes me wonder a bit about the overall age range of the other four, because is Leo like 17? Because that would make everything about him make a ton more sense.
Yeah, it really would. Yeah. Like, oh no, he's a literal teenager. Okay. Well, he's still disgusting, but he disgusts me a lot less.
It's like,
because he's a child.
He's still disgusting, but at least it makes sense why.
Yes.
But, like, if Leo is younger, or the youngest of the group, if Leo's not 17, like, if the others are all in their 20s and Tusk is 19, his behavior also makes it seem like he's trying to prove himself as, you know, equal to them and as responsible as them. We also have Leo dropping this line about, while fighting the monsters of the week, that, oh, you think you're so great because you have all these siblings? I have more siblings than you do. Which may also account for some of his weird personality stuff, because maybe he just acts out so much as a way of getting attention. And if he has, like, 5 to 6 siblings and he's 17... like, okay, yeah, I feel like everything about you makes a lot more sense. And I mean, I don't know much. I have no siblings. But I come from a family where, like, my mom has 4 cousins that are sisters, and they all have, like, 4 children each. So I'm kind of aware of the dynamics of, like, large sibling group families. And I feel like that kind of makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But I definitely agree that I wish we'd been dropping a lot more of these lines over the course of the show, because even one line like that, in the context of other little bits, again, Tusk is a real good example, can put together a really nice picture. And we've been denied a lot of that, especially on the part of Leo, and even more so on Amu, in which we have next to nothing.
Yeah, it's really egregious with Amu. It is weird to the point of kind of the thing where sometimes media wants to punish a character for having been bad, except she hasn't even been bad. And it's always the weirdest thing, because it's like, why do you want to punish them? You made them up. Maybe you shouldn't have made them be so bad. Just saying. But anyway, it also, I think the funnest thing that came to me about this is all of this also explains why Tusk is so quick to call Bard a scumbag thief, because he just talks like he's an old cop, which is just precious, because he's just this little baby elephant. It's adorable. But mostly I do wish we'd spend less time dropping these hints, which, like, I know would be like no time at all discussing their backstories, but and actually have more time just full on explicitly talking about them. I know that it's probably expensive to make more of those lion furry heads, but come on now.
Look, I mean, they're clearly not above buying those horse masks. You can just buy other cheap animal heads.
Yeah, exactly. It's fine. Or just use some of the ones you've got saved up, because I know I've seen some of those animal heads other places before. Like, they could find a way. If nothing else, like, you could show us Leo's dad's mustache, because basically I just want all the Zoolander dads to have mustaches.
And, like, I agree in the fact that, like, I want more time explicitly talking about it, but, like, it's also...
If we're not going to get it, let's hint.
Oh, no, not even that. Like, why not both?
Yeah, both is good.
Like, again, like, I'm gonna do a me and go back to Bokenger, where, you know, we have explicit backstories on people. We have Sakura. We have one episode where we don't, you know, have flashbacks, but we're like, oh, wait, you're, like, the daughter of this dude who runs this big financial company. Wait, why are you here? It's just like, I didn't want to do that. And here I am. And that in combination with that flashback in the Cinderella episode of her at the shooting range talking to Akashi about, like, oh, you're from this important family. Why did you leave and join special forces? And she's like, well, I wanted to do what I want. It adds to that without having to take a whole lot of time to then have a whole nother episode about it.
Yeah.
Like, that's a good way to build things, is you bring it up, you do a little exploration, and then you have people comment on it in their day-to-day lives, because it's an experience in their life that defines them.
Yeah, weird. Like, people would have lives and interests and be complicated and stuff.
Yeah.
Why would anyone do that?
Well, like, even to be in Zoodren, to use Tusk as the example, we get this flashback of, oh, he likes to read with his dad. He liked to read with his dad when he's a kid. Now we're establishing both he and his dad had this job that's very important in their society. And it's like, okay, well, if his dad is so important to him, he probably took the job because his dad had done it, and he wants to live up to that. Like, that's an easy conclusion to draw based on what we know about Tusk.
Yeah, it's true. I would also, like, it says something about him as a person that, you know, I think Tusk is actually one of the ones who's gotten a pretty good characterization, him and Yamato.
Him, Yamato, and Sella.
Yeah. And it's just, man, I wish they would give the rest of the cast as much love.
Yeah, please
tell me. Well, I mean, I guess they give Leo a lot more love, honestly.
Tell me any words about Amu. At all.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
In the Halloween episode, we drop that line that her and Tusk are childhood friends. I want to know more about
that. Why have we not heard
that?
This before?
I have zero context for that information.
And all I want is context for information. Information that I have that I do not have context for makes me angry. Like, I get really unreasonable.
Tell me any words about Amu. At all.
Yeah.
Any of them.
It's
I want it.
So...
Because again,
flipping frustrating. Like, all the things they keep not doing.
Again, I really love Amu. Like, she of the group, she's the one that I relate to. Like, there's stuff in Amu that I get a lot. So tell me things about her. Please. Make me care about her more. Because then I will buy Amu-related things, which is what you want.
Yeah, that's... It's the thing when you talk about one of these things and someone makes the oh so worthwhile and insightful observation, like, hey, this is all here to sell toys. And it's like, yeah, if it was good, it'd sell more of them.
Yeah, it's like, the thing is, if it's here to sell toys, it needs to make me want to buy the toys.
Yeah, again, my go-to is always Tokuger. Tokuger almost had me buy that robot so frickin' many times. Thankfully, for my pocketbook, I would look at the robot and I'd be like, oh wait, no, that thing is horrible. Never mind.
I bought the Apple Changer, and I've commented on this show before. The Apple Changer is a piece of garbage.
Yeah, it's not a very good toy.
But I bought it because boy do I love Akira. Boy do I love that man. And I mean, like, Ghost is a good example. I'm sitting here within my hand. I have Canon's Icon. Not even, like, the new good one that has, like, sounds and stuff. This is just a hunk of plastic. It does nothing. But I got it because it was gotten for me. It was a gift. It's in a set that I was splitting with someone, but as it came out around my birthday, he decided to just give it to me as a gift. I'm eternally thankful. But it doesn't even do anything. But I wanted it, and I'm glad that I have it, because God do I love canon. And I just paid for Onari's icon, which does have, you know, it says some things. And, again, I wanted it because I love him.
Yeah, that is entirely legit. Look,
he is a beautiful ray of sunshine that we do not deserve.
Yeah, and speaking of things that, were not kind to my pocketbook, I just sent my pre-order money off for the Kamen Rider Necrom figure arts. That thing is not cheap.
Yeah, I'll probably be picking that up secondhand, as I do. I have Ghost Inspector, and I might as well just round it out.
That's what I'm saying.
I pre-ordered both of them because I wanted their pre-order bonuses.
Yeah, yeah. You get the little floaty Urisen on the stick, and the cannon, the teeny tiny cannon icon that I am keeping in the plastic bag for now, because I don't want it to fall off, because I will never find it again, because they are so tiny. It's like the switches in the Forza figure arts. It's like, I think it's very great and neat and fun and happy that they are swappable. But come on, guys.
Yeah, one, I can't remember if it's base states or magnet states, but one of them is missing a switch, because they're on one of the high shelves up next to my bed, and my cats like to go knock stuff off of those.
And if you have carpet of any length or anything on your floor besides floor, you will never find it again.
Yeah, one day,
if you ever vacuum, that sucker is gone.
Oh yes, one day. It's thankfully my bed is here, so it's under that somewhere, and one day I'll go under there and I'll find it. I don't know when that day is going to be.
Yeah,
not in the near future.
Yeah. And it's, you know, you're gonna have to go under there with a flashlight and, like, some tweezers.
But, like, the thing is, these shows made, like, I have so much Bokenger stuff. I have so much. I have two Excellulars.
Wow.
I have jackets. I have 3 of 16 jackets. Like, I will throw all of my money at Bokenger things. Because that show was really good. And made me care. And made me want things.
You want a part of this thing that you love, that you can hold in your hand, and just have on you or around you. Or you can just look at it and you lay eyes on it. And it's like, oh yeah, that thing I like. And then you just flood with those good memories. Because that's a nice thing.
But like this show, I don't want to buy... And like, look, again, I will even buy badly designed stuff if it's from a thing that I like.
Again.
Like, I don't think the apple changer, like, looks bad. It's just, as a toy, it is a piece of garbage, because it does zero things. But, I mean, like, what's a good example of stuff that has zero design work into it that I've just bought? I don't know. Something, I'm sure. But, like, I don't care if it looks bad. I'll buy it if it's a thing that makes me happy.
Yeah.
Like, if it's from a thing that I like, I will pay monies for it. Heck, I have 7 shift cars sitting on my desk.
Wow.
I don't even like that show, but I love Vegas and Cab, so I have them.
Yeah.
I
think that is a big failing on Juojo's part, because, like, I want to love everyone in this show, but every time I love someone on it, it always comes with this massive asterisk. Like, look, I love Yamato, and it's just like, yeah, but he gets all the cool stuff, and I don't want Yamato in whale, I want Sella with the whale coat. Because, sorry, that coat is freaking sick, dude.
Yeah, it is. I mean, like, I love Amu. I love her so much. Asterisk. She's weird and manipulative and gross sometimes.
Yeah.
Whenever they, like, turn the camera on her. I don't know why, because she's not like that at any other times.
Yeah, and if nothing else, like, she introduced that frustrating and strange little girl to the idea, like, hey, you know, you could just like girls.
It's like, you might be gay, and that's fine. You might be bi, because you clearly
also
are into
fine.
Both of us. Go for it. Follow your dreams,
but,
kid.
Preferably with people your own age, kid. Okay, okay.
Yeah, also, yeah, do that, and also, like, people who actually, like, want to be in a relationship with you.
Yeah.
In your own age group. Like, those
this,
are
this whole
those
thing
are
with
the
princes
two requirements.
Is cute. Yeah, exactly. Princess is cute. Make sure everyone is in on this and wants in. And this is on purpose. Okay.
But like, man, it's just, it really feels like the show isn't trying sometimes.
Yeah. Do they not want me to buy their robots? Because look,
I'm not going to do it on my own. I'm not going to do it just because it's a cool looking robot.
Yeah. By the way, these are not very cool robots. So y'all should be working those things a lot harder.
It's like, you gotta, if you want someone to buy the toy, like, this is what happened to GoBusters. Learn from it.
Yeah.
Because, like, all the stuff in GoBusters was real cool looking. The combined robots, not so much. But, like...
Yeah, they're kind of...
The individual robot, like, the individual, like, vehicles and just Buster Ace, real cool looking. Like, that stuff should have been an easy sell.
And yet...
But they couldn't keep the show consistent.
Yeah, and like, if you're going to have these externalized memories, which, again, that's kind of, at least for me anyway, one of the functions of collectible toys, just things I can look at and associate with things I like, make sure I like it.
Yeah.
Make it so that looking at that thing is as painless for me as possible.
Because, like, again, Ghostager. I don't dislike Ghostager. I don't think Ghostager is bad in any way. I actually really enjoy it. But it's not, like, one of my favorite shows. I have a ton of Gosei Knight stuff. Because I just adore him.
Yeah, that's because he's great.
So, like, I was watching Ghostager, like, around the time that Megaforce was happening. So, there was a lot of Gosei Knight stuff, or whatever he's called in that, in my local Toys R Us. And I'm like, okay, time for me to just keep buying these, because I love this robot lion. I love this
robot lion.
Robot lion
head.
Like, I just,
it's just the head.
I have a big old Gosei Knight that says stuff in weird robotic voices.
Nice.
Weird random Power Ranger stuff. Dumb and great. I have, I don't remember. Jungle Fury? Was that Geki Ranger?
You were asking the entirely wrong person.
I think that's the one it was, because I think Wild Force was Gal Ranger. I mix those two up a lot. But I have whatever their Ryo and Melee is, because it's in roughly the figure art scale, and Bandai refuses to sell me anything. And
I've been there.
I love it. It's, for some reason, the little lion on Ryo's chest, if you push his belt, its mouth moves. And it's hysterical.
That's a strange thing.
That's not a thing in either show, but for some reason, that's the toy gimmick, and it's hysterical.
I guess they just needed one more thing for the toy.
And if anyone can find it, I would recommend you buy it. It is my favorite thing to do when I am feeling sad. It's so dumb. But, like, look, I will buy anything if you make me like it.
Yeah, that was the reason I don't even like Drive.
I have 4 shift cars and 3 viral cores.
That's impressive.
Two of which, it's one are speed and tight and high speed, because I bought a Telebicoon.
Oh, nice.
But, you know, I don't like Drive, but I love Vegas and Cab, and I want them in my life. And here they are.
Makes sense to me. Now then, before we get ourselves off on another tangent, what do you say we wrap this one up?
That's probably a good idea.
That's a bit of positivity that it was nice to end out with.
Yeah, just while we're feeling good about something.
Yeah, so for Laser Knees and the Toll Network, I'm Aleph.
And I'm Sono.
And we will catch you next time.
Yes.